Strategy and Insider, exploring future trends and their impacts.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to the Strategy and Insider podcast. For this episode, I have once again traveled all the way to Tokyo, Japan, one of the world's most dynamic hubs for technology, longevity, but also innovation in healthcare. Today, we explore a question that will define the future of medicine. What does actually the next generation of personalized health look like, and what does that mean for each of us? I'm delighted to be joined by a visionary leader who sits at the crossroads of genomics, AI, but also digital health, and has spent more than two decades driving innovation across industries, but also across continents. So please welcome Michel Momeja, who is the President, Representative Director, and Chief Innovation Officer at Adam Innovations. Michel actually is a global cosmopolitan, originally from France, who has lived and worked in the US, UK, and Asia, holding executive roles that span marketing, digital transformation, as well as healthcare innovation. He actually joined Adam Innovations back in 2018 as Chief Marketing Officer, was then promoted to Chief Innovation Officer in 2023, and most recently was appointed as President in January 25. Adam Innovations is actually a pioneer in genomics and precision health here in Japan, having completed more than 2.9 million genetic tests and built the largest R&D genomic database for the Japanese population. Under its brand GeneLife, the company offers direct-to-consumer genetic testing kits, while clinical sequencing services with Genesis Pro is a second leg, and then a third leg around AI-powered genomic data platform called Genesis Gaia. Michel is also an entrepreneur at heart with extensive experience launching startups, joint ventures, and also strategic partnerships. So with all that said, I'm truly looking forward to this conversation. So Michel, really thank you for hosting us here in your office in Tokyo and for joining me on this podcast.
First, welcome to our office in Tokyo, and thank you for having me on the podcast and joining the discussion today.
So, Michel, you are originally from France and have built your career across four continents, having lived and worked in Boston, London, Singapore, and since 2016 in Tokyo. This, to me, is really an extraordinary global journey. What drew you to Japan specifically? And after all these years living here, what is it about Tokyo and the Japanese culture that continues to inspire you, both personally but also professionally?
I feel very fortunate to have been able to live and walk across multiple continents through all my career, basically having such a diversity of environments where I've been able to engage in different technologies and solutions for customers and profiles. I first came in Japan in the early 2000s. I spent 6 years here initially, then I moved to Singapore for 9 years, mm-hmm. and then I came back in 2016. So I've been spending quite a significant part of my life here in Japan. I originally came to Japan to launch a digital marketing agency at the very beginning of the digital era. Mm-hmm. Back then, we didn't have Google Translate, Google Maps, and all the tools that you are using when you are traveling
every day,
in Tokyo,
right? Yeah.
At the moment. So it was a very, very different experience to live. And it was really fascinating on that front to engage already in Japan, in a sense that it was already the first global market, uh-huh. or the most advanced market when it comes to mobile communications.
Interesting.
So people were already using mobile internet, mobile content in this part of the world while it was still very nascent in Europe or North America. So I was not only impressed by the technology by itself, but how it could transform the life of people and their engagements with technology, but also how they commute, how they consume content and information. Tokyo still inspires me today because it really naturally blends this tradition and this modernity that you can see every day when you go around the city. Professionally, Japan is also fascinating because it's facing some of the world's biggest healthcare challenging first, you know, aging population, longevity, preventing healthcare, and now the convergence of AI applied to healthcare. So it's a very unique blend. So just like 20 years ago when I came to Japan, where mobile was the first global market, I have the feeling that for healthcare and precision medicine, this is the
it's
coming back on that front. And personally, you know, living across Europe, the US, as well as Asia, has taught me that basically innovation comes from different cultures and blending different experiences all together. And at Adam Innovation, for example, about 20% of our team members are non-Japanese. So it's very important for us to have that diversity that, you know, bring different perspectives to innovate and drive those changes over time.
And before healthcare, you actually spent many years in the world of marketing and advertising and digital transformation, working with major global brands, actually. So quite a different universe from genomics and biotech. Was there a particular moment or experience that made you say, well, I want to dedicate my career to healthcare? And what learnings and experiences that you've made in the past can you still kind of weave into day-to-day job and business and doing here at Adam Innovations?
So at first glance, you know, marketing and genomics are very different.
It is.
you know, very different world on that aspect. But for me, the transition actually was very logical and very natural. For about 20, 25 years, basically, I work in direct marketing, in CRM, in social media, and digital transformation, where I was helping brands and companies to transform themselves through data and create more personalized experiences and stronger relationship with consumers. As such, genomics is the most personal and meaningful type of data that an individual can ever have. So I could see a tremendous potential for personalization, but also to contribute to society through healthcare and biotech. What was fascinating to me was very much to realizing that biology and genomics are becoming an information system. For me, it becomes the foundations where you are able to understand about yourself and potential predispositions that you have about developing specific conditions or disease, or even apply it to your day-to-day life or wellness on that front. So this foundation is critical, and I truly believe that it will be imperative for everybody to do a test in the future as part of their longevity and prevention to gracefully aging, as we say in Japan. And also because of that convergence of genomics, combining biomarkers, lifestyle information, and AI to really develop those personalized health journeys, it makes total sense with my marketing background. Always looking at data as a transformation or enabling transformation through data. And that's where my marketing and digital background has been very relevant for me and very useful, because marketing is about understanding people, identifying patterns, looking at trends, and translating complexity into simplicity, or doing something that is meaningful and actionable with it. So for me, that was actually a very logical transition, because I always came from a background of data and using the data to change and transform companies, products, or experiences.
And because you mentioned that element around Japan and this region being again at the forefront of innovation when it now comes to healthcare as compared to internet, mobility, and the like in the past. Given that you have been now obviously living in this region, but also in Europe and in the US, with regard to healthcare and prevention, and also your phrase of gracefully aging that you have in Japan, there is also the Kenkon Shindan, which is under the Industrial Safety and Health Act, kind of a must-have annual checkup as somebody who is working in Japan, that needs to be organized also by the employer for the employees and is a mandatory step to get your health checkup as set on an annual basis. So Japan is somewhat probably more sensitive to prevention and health status. Is that kind of a conclusion that is fair to make? Or what is kind of the difference that you're seeing here when people think about healthcare prevention and managing their status versus other areas of the world?
I think prevention and looking after yourself is very much ingrained in the Japanese culture. Mm-hmm. And you can see, you know, people are very active. Many people work, you know, past 60 years old and yes. are extremely engaged uh-huh. in life and activities. We do have some emeritus professors that we work with that are, you know, in their 70s to 80s that mm-hmm. want to contribute and help and support basically the younger generations mm-hmm. to keep growing. So I think it's very cultural on that front. I think also if you think about the blue zones and Okinawa, for example, mm-hmm. that has been identified as a zone for longevity, yeah. it also comes from how to stay active mentally and physically, mm-hmm. looking at nutrition and what food and what you drink as part of being able to age gracefully, as mm-hmm. I said. But I think that's a key cultural component that is very different maybe from other mm-hmm. part of the world.
And this is also, and we'll come to that in a second, obviously, why Adam Innovations is well placed here, yeah, to also innovate at the forefront of yeah. customer-facing genetic testing to inform life choices and help prevention. But before jumping there, I also got to know you as somebody who is really a lifelong learner, who takes regular courses at renowned institutions like Wharton, Stanford, Imperial College, Yale, INSEAD, and I could go on, all while running a company. How do you stay curious and keep learning at that pace? And how does that kind of continuous education directly feed into the way that you lead but also innovate with this company?
I believe that curiosity is probably one of the most important skills that one needs to have, mm-hmm. particularly in a continuously changing world. Again, I was making reference to all the different disciplines that are to manage and, mm-hmm. and learn over my career. So, you know, I constantly had to renew and upgrade my skills every 2 to 3 years, technically, if you want to keep with the pace of change and new technologies, not for the sake of learning, but to create meaningful impact on businesses, but also people's life as such. So it's very important to remain that. And that's what also I'm teaching to my 3 kids to learn that they will have to adapt and be very flexible in how they need to manage their careers. So, you know, continuous learning is a core skill to be able to sustain in the mm-hmm. in the long term. Also allows you to stay open to new ideas, mm-hmm. New technologies, and also having different perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, I was making reference a bit earlier on about the development between genomics, AI, and data science. They are all converging together. And the pace of change and the development is very fast. So we need to keep learning all the time and be curious. I think this is any young person in the future needs to have that curiosity to be able to continue and sustain. And then most of the time, the most valuable insight not only come from a class or listening, but also from the interactions that you get with people. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be an entrepreneur, it could be an advisor, it could be an investor, it could be an analyst, teacher, a scientist. But also getting all those influences all together keeps you on your toes and be open, basically, to keep learning and adding those new solutions or consideration as part of what you do in your working life. As a leader, I don't think I need to know everything. My role is to stay connected, to be adaptable, ask the right questions, and connect ideas so we can keep evolving as a company. We are very fortunate because we have a lot of very talented experts mm-hmm. In their fields from, you know, the laboratory, from the pure science perspective, data science, bioinformatics, tech development, AI, etc. So it's really bringing and converging all those skill sets together. Our innovation center is a great example of that, where we have brought in an open space, basically, data science, bioinformatics, tech development, product development, marketing, and product innovation all together. So everybody is working in the same directions, and we are basically blending all those different expertise together. Because science keeps evolving, technology keeps evolving, we get more and more data, and so we need to have everybody together to work on that. And again, this is where marketing comes back and yeah. as a skill, because you look at those trends and those activities as such.
And I To be honest, I couldn't agree more on your phrase around convergence, because we're also seeing this. In healthcare, we're going to see a fundamental shift that is not only happening in hospitals or at a doctor's place physically, but healthcare needs to be in the here and now, in the 24/7, in all of our lives. And therefore, we're not only spending globally, we're not spending more than 30 minutes per person at a doctor's place a year. This is at best bug fixing that we're seeing, right? If we talk preventing health and taking health more serious, it needs to be at home, at work, at our way to work. And for that, we also see a lot of convergence of industries around healthcare and into healthcare. There is retail companies, there is mobility companies, there is real estate looking into this. And this brings kind of healthcare at the next level as well. Let's also set stage for our listeners who may be less familiar with your area of expertise. So can you explain in at best simple terms what personalized health powered by genetics actually means for an individual? And what can somebody kind of learn from a genetic test for managing their health?
So the simplest way to think about genetics is that your DNA is your biological blueprint. Doesn't it predict your future for certainty? But it can help explain why people respond differently to things like nutrition, to exercise, sleep, stress, medication, or even specific drugs. So it's a blueprint, it's a foundation about predisposition you may have to develop specific conditions or even disease ultimately. To take some simple example, some people may process caffeine differently. Some metabolize it very quickly, some other much more slowly. So if you take a coffee now with time zone difference, you may stay up quite a long time tonight on your side. I don't know. That could be a possibility. Some people may respond better to certain type of exercise or nutrition, while others react very, very differently to a medication or drug dosage. So genetics is about probabilities, not necessarily destiny. Some people believe this is a destiny. Actually, no, it's more a blueprint that gives you an indication of predisposition that you have. And based on your lifestyle, based on the context of your life, you may develop or may not develop those conditions. What personalized health really means is moving away from a one-size-fits-all approach to something that is more individualized and preventive as such. Traditionally, healthcare, as you mentioned, has been more reactive. People go to the doctor after something goes wrong. Now, prevention is coming, so you anticipate your wellness, you anticipate your health to avoid getting to the point where you need to take medication or you need to see the doctor. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, one key aspect. And genomics, you know, combined with additional biomarkers or AI, allows us to better understand potential risk. And that's what we are about. And that's where we make a difference for people. So it's bringing all those items together to help to anticipate basically wellness as well as health and prevention overall.
And honestly, with all that information around ourselves that we're learning on ourselves, there is also a paradox in personalized health. And you're actually very outspoken about the problem of inaccurate medical information that is largely online. So science is advancing rapidly, but consumer understanding often lags far behind, of course, and many people still associate genetic testing with ancestry kids and other extreme with frightening news about disease risks and the like. So meanwhile, the internet obviously is flooded with misleading health content. And also many of the Google searches that people are doing are related to health conditions. And there is approximations of 5% and even above of Google searches are related to healthcare. What do you believe it will take to close this kind of literacy gap? And who is actually responsible for closing this literacy gap of society? Do you believe it's government? Is it companies? Is it physicians or other media? Or where do you see this?
This is a very interesting and important point because as people live in the moment and at the speed of social media, there are potential misunderstanding, misinformation, or disconnections, to be honest. I think on some aspects, one of the biggest issues is oversimplification. When I go back to genomics, people often believe genetics explain everything or nothing at all. It's almost the two opposites. When the reality is much more nuanced, you know, the participants need to have education, explanation, and proper context to really understand what that genomic information is about and what it means. I truly believe that a genetic test is actually a lifelong investment. This is something that will give insight and information that can be reused across the years. And as you age, provide more context about, again, potential disease or predisposition you might have. Now, who's in charge of providing that information? I think the government or institutions provide a good job, particularly in Japan. As you explained, you know, there is a very good framework about health check on a yearly basis and support
really
and social security is in place with, you know, national insurance, etc. So I think Japan is very well protected and in place, has multiple solutions in place on that front. But I believe that individuals are going to make the difference. Again, because the system is more about treating a disease, so you see a doctor and you have access to healthcare once you have the disease or the condition already happening. I think there is a realization of the individuals that they want to anticipate because knowledge is much more accessible. There is a very high level of education in a way, they, particularly in Japan, where people understand more about their health and, you know, sickness and everything. And again, going back to that cultural aspect of trying to understand more about your health, anticipating and aging gracefully. I think that's an era of combinations that allows basically people to take more ownership. So I think the individual, the issues that are very tricky is that accessing the information and combining the different data sets that you may get about your health is complicated in a sense that everything is disconnected. You could have, you know, your health check, as you mentioned, but also you have maybe wearables, you get blood tests and all the things that you do. But there is not a unified system that provides that information in the long term and see the progress over the years overall. So there is a lot of progress that to be done in providing an ecosystem that allows people to connect that data, not only in the moment T, but in the long term. Additionally, the doctors have a play to have where it's again not only looking at treating the symptoms that have appeared, but how to anticipate and have preventive actions. And that's where there's two disconnections visible, where we need to have that reconciliations between the individual, the medical practitioners, and also the government to provide those solutions.
And one of the most immediate and practical applications of genomics that affects millions of people actually is pharmacogenomics. So the idea that our DNA can predict how well we will respond to a specific medication. And really today, and I'm coming from the medical field, obviously, it is around prescribing drugs, which is still largely trial and error for many conditions. How close do you think we are to a world where even a simple genetic test could tell a doctor which drug will probably work best for an individual at what dose and what are the ones with the fewest side effects so you can make an informed choice? Do you believe this is coming at some point?
Yes. It's coming. It's not mainstream at that stage, but I think pharmacogenomics specifically is one of the most important and practical application of genomics. Right now, prescribing medication is still often based on trial and error. You know, one person responds well, another may experience side effects, and another may see little benefit at all. So genetics can help to understand those differences. You know, some people metabolize certain drugs faster or slower than others, which can impact both effectiveness and side effect. I actually experienced this personally a few years ago. I was prescribed with a medication for a cold. And honestly, I felt more sick from the drug than from the cold itself. Later, you know, 2-3 years after, I took my pharmacogenomic test and I discovered that I have adverse reaction to a specific compound in that medication. Since then, I've been obviously avoiding it. Knowledgeable about it. So the idea behind pharmacogenomics is very simple. It's using genetic information to help physicians to choose the right drug at the right dose for the right person. And this is another example of biology and genomics are becoming an information system that can support more precise and personalized medicine or healthcare.
And the idea that we can actually shift from a reactive medicine to prevention to predictive health is also a fundamental belief of me personally. And we also, as a team and as a company, established a concept in our strategy and thought leadership publications that we call a life care ecosystem, where disease care as well as well care do converge. Yet for most people around the world, a visit to the doctor still only happens when something goes wrong, right? So from your perspective, what are the biggest barriers that still hinder us towards a more preventative and personalized health that is actually becoming at some point a mainstream? So what does it actually need to take that also in your case, genetic insights and testing is becoming a very routine in annual checkups?
So I completely agree that healthcare is moving from reactive medicine towards a more preventive level or even wellness-focused model. You know, one of the biggest barriers is that healthcare systems are really originally designed to treat disease, not to maintain wellness or prevent problems before they happen. So that's one of the key aspects that needs to be changed or addressed in the long term. As you say, people usually go to the doctor when something goes wrong, not before. And having the conversation with the doctor about preventing, you know, I'm a bit of a data maniac, potentially like you as well, where, you know, I look at some of my biomarkers over a period of years and I show that to my doctor and I say, look, the trend is going in that direction and I don't like it but the doctor is going to tell me, don't worry, because I didn't, you know, pass this threshold, which means that I need to have treatments. So how to curve to avoid to get to that level. And that's an era that the organizations and the way that things are managed at the moment are not have not changed. So it will take time on that front. The other challenge is also beyond the education of the doctors to be able to shift from treatment to prevention is all the data is fragmented. You know, if you try to connect things all together, you don't really have an ecosystem or framework that is really allowing you to look at all that data on a longitudinal level. You know, the health check that you did 10 years ago might be still interesting because it's going to give you the evolution over a period of time. But you don't have it. Or the effort that you need to do to put it into a format that is understandable and provide you that historical view is very complicated and challenging. So that part is, I think, that fragmentation, because it's coming from the clinics or the doctors, the hospitals, but also how you connect with wearable data that you may have in your day-to-day life as well. So connecting all the dots becomes very, very complex.
And I fully agree with you on those challenges. One of the most challenging part is to me also how you take the system along onto this. So the doctors of today, and I'm coming from that field, has said, we learn a lot about diseases and how to treat them, but none of the doctors that is in action yet or now has actually been trained on healthy nutrition, healthy sporting, healthy eating, living, whatever. So he or she will need to be also subsidized by insights and data analytics in the background that is kind of readily available once this person has a dialogue with a patient or a person that he coaches to stay more prevented, more healthy. So this will be one of the key challenges to really unlock prevention big time, I would say.
I also believe that, you know, as we go over time, genetic testing will become a routine, mm-hmm. you know, as part of your portfolio of medical check that you do, blood check or annual check, etc., to inform and look at that information to inform those decisions or, you know, preventions over a period of time. So at the moment, it's not yet ingrained into a full ecosystem where it's part of the different items that you look at. But I do believe this is going to come to life, and that's going to be changing, because suddenly you look at your genetics, you look at your yearly check, you look at the historical data all together to have a much better understanding of the situation of the individual, and then decide what would be the right approaches and the right treatments on the back of it.
No, I'm fully with you that genetic testing will be a very fundamental source of information, not only in the multi-omics testing space, but more broadly in understanding individuals end to end. Coming probably back to Japan in brief. Yeah? So Japan has one of the most rapidly aging societies in the world, yet it has also one of the longest life expectancies. And that creates both a tremendous healthcare challenge because people live longer, but also a unique opportunity. Your company has completed now more than 2.9, close to 3 million genetic tests here, and built the largest genomic database around the Japanese population, giving you a kind of a unique window into this demographic reality. How does Japan's aging society shape your vision for preventative health? And what can other countries learn from the Japanese approach to aging and wellness?
Japan is often, you know, described as the world's laboratory for aging societies. And the country faces major demographic challenges, but it also offers important lessons about longevity prevention and wellness. What I find fascinating is that Japan has traditionally focused not only on living longer, but also maintaining quality of life and independence as people age. That's a key learning I think we can take from the country. Again, going back to your comments about the preventive checkups that people do, but also the balanced nutrition, daily movement, social connection within the culture are very important. Everybody, again, goes back to the example of the Blue Zone of Okinawa that has attracted global attention for healthy aging and longevity over, you know, over the last few years. What makes us unique at Adam Innovation is because we have completing 2.9 million genetic tests, we do have a unique opportunity to better understand how genetic lifestyle, aging, as well as environment are interacting over time. And within the Japanese population, obviously. So that helps us a lot to have that knowledge. And for instance, we have developed some specific solutions or services where we don't only look at the genetic risk of developing a specific condition, but again, we combine that and we add additional biomarkers that could be, you know, your BMI, could be your blood pressure, glucose, levels, other blood biomarkers altogether to, on the fly, if you change those variables, to see how it changes basically your risk, either up or down. So let's say you lose 10 kilos. Is it going to impact your risk of developing a cardiovascular risk or not? If you are able to control your glucose or your blood pressure, is it going to change your... So you can see as you age, you can see the progression and how you can take interventions or actions that will help you to do that. So in our mobile application, we have these options where you can look at those changes and really try to help individuals to take those actions on that front. Again, the reason why we can do that is because we have significant data to build the models in the first place. And then validating that with the proper literature and research that we have to support the evidence on that front.
So one I'm actually going back in the next couple of days from Japan to Europe. And I'm coming back from a country that aims for graceful aging, and it is kind of a laboratory where you have those genetic data on. What are the two, three advices that I would take back to a region like Europe on what people could and should do in order to have that graceful aging, that more preventative approach to healthcare?
I think you need to think from an holistic approach. You need to look at your health, but also your wellness overall, including nutrition, including physical activities and mental health, yes, mm-hmm. basically. I'm quite, I guess, very focused and do many, many different things, but I monitor everything. You can see I have a ring, I have a watch.
Yeah.
I do have, from time to time, I have a
glucose monitor. So do I.
I have... blood pressure, digital blood pressure instrument at home, digital scale, and I monitor basically everything and then combine that with my genetic result as well, plus my yearly check, plus, you know, checking. It's a bit extreme and not everybody is able to make all that effort and combine all that information and trying to develop your own AI model to identify what are the risks and what intervention you should do. But I think people are going to get there and technology is going to help them too on that front. I do believe again that so strongly that genetics is the foundations. Mm-hmm. It's a foundation layer where you add all the different biomarkers plus the different tests that you do over a period of your life to really inform on what will make a difference for individuals.
And genetic data is arguably the most personal information that really exists about a human being. It is immutable, inherited, and it can reveal things about family members who even never consented to a test, but they still have this information in the family. As the industry scales globally, how should we think about the ethical framework and the data governance models needed to earn, but also maintain consumer trust, because that it would ultimately is required also to leverage genomic data for research purposes in order to benefit society while still protecting the individual's right to privacy. What is your perspective on that?
Genetic data is probably the most sensitive type of data that is available. And it's permanent to your point, deeply personal, and also connect your family members, you know. Hereditary information basically is written in your DNA. So trust is absolutely fundamental in this industry. I believe company needs to move beyond the traditional internet model where people are the product. What I mean by that is we need transparency. Everything we do, for instance, is consented and transparent about do you participate in R&D or not. And if one individual's data is used for R&D, basically they should be rewarded. They should be part of the ecosystem. So again, it's not about being in social media and being the product. It's actually you get something back if you participate, if your data is useful for healthcare innovation, for research, or even commercial value creation. So we are really moving towards a shared value or shared economy model around health data. And I think that will be the success within the industry, is to actually give back to the participants and the user something so they get part of the reward as well. Not only some players have been selling the data. We should never sell the data in the first place, but it's about sharing that component. And once that is in place, I think, to your point, more people will participate and new discoveries are going to come as a result to solve some of the sickness and conditions that we need to address. At the same time, you know, society can benefit from genomic research for better prevention, faster drug discovery, more personalized medicines and improved outcomes. So the challenge is really to create governance model that really balance innovation with privacy. I think that's the key aspect. Security is also a key aspect. You know, how do you protect the data that is so private and personal and unique to an individual? So recently, we also developed a new service in terms of genomic data security, a platform called GeneLock. And basically, the idea is that we need to have stronger security, privacy-preserving infrastructure, data sovereignty, and transparent approach. With GeneLock, for example, the genetic data are encrypted, fragmented, and distributed across different locations. It means that it's a digital puzzle. Mm-hmm. It means that each fragment by itself is meaningless. It's only when you put them back together that you have everything. Because one of the key risks is you have, if you have your genome, if it becomes lost mm-hmm. or accessed by somebody else, they have all your information. By having this digital puzzle, suddenly it's very, very difficult to rebuild that aspect. So that's really driving new development in how you protect the data mm-hmm. and also support privacy concerns that users may have.
And probably jumping onto that, because you have, as Adam Innovations, coined also the concept of artificial general gene intelligence, or AGGI, as you call it. Can you please unpack what it actually means in practice and also how it differs from the way AI is used based on this versus elsewhere in healthcare, and what it could enable given this in the coming years?
So we have been operating for 23 years now. And very early, we have been one of the first companies to apply generative AI to some of our genomic services, particularly Genesis Gaia. I just mentioned earlier on GeneAI Forecast, which combines genomics, biomarkers, and lifestyle data to help participants to, take interventions and also have simulations based on changing their lifestyle, how it will impact on their risk or predisposition that they have. Again, what makes our approach different is that not only we apply AI, but because we have access to one of the largest genomic data set of the population, that really allows us to develop much more relevant prediction model, especially for Japanese and Asian populations, which remain underrepresented in global R&D. So it's very much, how do we use AI about moving beyond static genetic reports towards more dynamic and continuously evolving biological intelligence? I think that's the key part on how we use it. And, this AGGI is very much about, the idea that biology and genomics are becoming an intelligent information system where genomic data serves as a foundation layer of biological health and information for the future of healthcare. That's what we are building. And that's how we, and honestly, it's still the beginning, with the rapid evolution of AI, especially agentic AI, the potential to create more personalized, more adaptive and preventive healthcare experiences is becoming extremely exciting, but also it's a wide open canvas. So we were very excited on those developments. No one has yet the full solution, but that's very, very exciting.
Well, hard to find a better ending for this episode. So really thank you, Michel, for such a fascinating yet insightful conversation on the future of genomics, but also AI and also personalized health, and obviously also for welcoming me to Tokyo.
My pleasure. It was really nice to meet you and have a meaningful conversation today. And please feel free to come back anytime you want, whenever you're in town.
I will count you up on that. So thank you very much. What I found most striking were your really kind of very insightful aspects around the society and the societal mindset of the Japanese around graceful aging and how people are actually taking ownership on their health, on their well-being, and taking that very serious on a personal note. Secondly, I found it striking how you shared your ideas around protecting the trust around genetic data, but also how you focus on bringing value to individuals, but also to a Japanese society as such. And third, I was deeply impressed when doing the lab tour, because you are combining here under one roof the management next to the wet lab testing, but also the innovation center. And this is actually where, in the end, the magic happens between all those three legs. So thank you everyone for joining us today. Be sure to check out other episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or whatever you prefer to listen to. Stay tuned for our next episodes back from Europe. And while I'm here in Tokyo, I will check out, of course, further innovations and startups from this pulsing hub. And I look forward to being inspired myself. So maybe we will have another episode from the Asian region soon. And having said that, have a nice day, take care, and of course, stay safe.
Strategy and Strategy made real.